Good morning and welcome to Getting Drunk to Brass Tacks for Wednesday, the 8th of July, 2020. My name is Glenn Murray and I will be your moderator for today's program that goes until 2 p.m. And that will be made possible through the technical wizardry and the judgment of our producer, Mrs. Michelle Brathett. I want to thank all those who have in the past several months been encouraging me to hopefully make this return to the area's life other than as a caller. Your support was greatly appreciated. This is made possible obviously through the courtesy and cooperation and hopefully good judgment of StarCom, especially Mr. David Ellis. Michelle Brown, like I said, is our producer technical operator, and our phone number is probably phone number 4341790, and the WhatsApp number is 2664862. I'd like to send there probably do a survey and see if they're probably even more popular in Barbados than the police emergency numbers and the fire service emergency numbers. So you have very well-known numbers, which leads us into this institution that is Getting Drunk to Brass Tacks, and I urge you and I encourage you to let's take full advantage of it. I'd like to make a few introductory remarks myself and mention a number of topics and my take on them. Topics because in growing up, we would have said that there's not so much a multiplicity of topics. We would talk about a woogle of topics, or a tant of topics, or a garrison of topics, or a mobbleton of topics. All mean plentiful, plentiful, and that you should therefore have no excuse not to be able to have an opinion and seek to voice it on this program. So I look forward to welcoming you to Dr. Brass Tacks for us today's issue. My only requirement is that is my customary stand is that we discuss actions, statements, but not persons and personalities. Let's deal with the issues that emanate from a person's behavior, person's pronouncement, but do not please seek to cast aspersions on anybody's character, personality, integrity. Something that I never cared. I never ever expect, criticize persons for what I perceive to be their personality flaws. I always try to deal with their behavior, with their actions in public, nothing in their personal life, and therefore I'd expect us to extend that same courtesy and that same general principle to walk transparent on the program, particularly because I think that we need to maintain the highest standards of possible for this institution, which is the easiest, highest standard of public debate in Barbados at this time, including that in Parliament. I made that statement and I got some calls challenging me to it, and at some point I get around to explain why I say so. But I think on a good day, Brass Tacks is the place to be, the place to voice your opinion, the place to make your contribution, and the place to learn something. When I give my opinions, I don't do it from the person's point of view that I'm right, and I won't accept my perspective. I just want to think about it to give you hopefully another angle of saying or hearing things. But if I jump right into the topics, I'd like to welcome the explanation from Minister Dwight Sutherland as to this level playing field controversy which he had generated by his statements more than a week ago. I just wonder why it took him so long to do so. It was such a raging controversy, especially on social media, as they concern, as far as I've been told that one would have thought it would have surfaced better before some of those negative attitudes had become cemented in people's mind that he comes and put his case. It's interesting that he said in the House of Assembly yesterday that he was misunderstood and misinterpreted. All the more reason why he should have come to the public instantly, within a day or two, to set the record straight. But instead he waited for more than a week, and to my mind, he seemed resorted to doing his explanation from the safety of the House of Assembly, where he cannot be challenged, where he cannot be interviewed and challenged, like I said, by a reporter or whatever. And therefore, he was able to control the narrative in a way that suited his purpose. And I understand that. I understand it from a public relations communications technique where you, your job is to re-control a narrative from your point of view. And then he doubled up by issuing a statement from through the safety and security of the Government Information Service, where that message is a controlled, sanitized message that would put his perspective. I just like to say that. He said he learned the benefits of communication, effective communication. But effective communication relies on getting information from both sides. And I think his mistake was to make a pronouncement based on one set of information, as would seem, and not having heard from the used car dealers, which he did eventually. And then he was able to come up with a statement in GIS and put a different perspective on the whole issue, where the used car dealers are now left to feel that they'll be part of the dialogue, they'll be part of the process of formulating new policies that will lead towards the leveling of the playing field, so to speak. So that's where Minister Dwight Sutherland is concerned. I'd also like to make a quick reference to the Attorney General Dale Marshall, where at long last he corrected, as he said, he tidied up his, we had the promised tidy up exercise of the question dealing with the issue of the appointment of two deputy commissioners, of a second deputy commissioner. I also am a big fan of Attorney General Dale Marshall as a speaker. I think on a good day when he has hard his interview, he has presence, his language of the highest order, he presents well, and he's one of my top speakers in Parliament today. But I must take, unless there was no different accent, I must take with the content rather than the form. I didn't quite understand why, rather than just coming and say that he's tidying it, because you only tidy up something if a mess has been made, if there's been confusion and disarray. I think if he'd said that and gone on to state the rationale for the move in the first place, which nobody has disputed, which nobody can find out, it would have been better for him. But then to he criticized the legalistic, the formalistic approach of his critics rather than those dealing with the substantive subject, I think was unbecoming of a man of his stature and potential, because he would understand that process matters. So what he's called formalistic is form, is process, is system. And the system, the form, are there to protect people from the mistakes and the missteps and the misdeeds that have been occurring all too frequently with this government. As a matter of fact, I'd like to hear a person's point of view as to what people think of the pronouncement yesterday by leader of the opposition, Bishop Joseph Athey, where he termed and labeled the present government a fumble mania government based on the all too frequent missteps that have been taking place in as they roll out their programs, the latest being the one with the planning development bill, which seeks to require Barbadian occupants to require an occupant certificate for any work done on renovating the house, etc. So we have, plenty of opportunities to voice your opinion, and I've been very glad to do so. I look forward to hearing you on 4341790 and also on 2664862. We can now go to the calls. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Clive. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, ma'am?
I'm fine. I am so pleased to be the first caller to say to you, Welcome back. It is a delight to have you back. We are looking forward to great discussions with your style of moderating, and I am really, really pleased to have you here, creating balance, etc. I want to endorse your opening remarks that, you know, this thing, because I'm going to do it based on a comment by a regular who I don't like you. I don't even resort to replying to those persons. But for purposes of, you know, probably elucidation, and just opening people's mind. When you criticize, as you say, policies, etc., you don't get personal. I don't get personal. You deal with public figures' actions, not their personal life, their personal business, etc. And persons who are supporters need to understand that they may want to worship at the feet of their leader. I am not in that I am not in that category. I worship at the feet of no one except my Lord Jesus Christ. Let me say that clearly. So therefore, when you expect that persons do and say things and you must sit, be quiet, because to criticize or to point out is, or to ask question is to not like a person or to not like a party, I think you all need to open your mind and understand what it means about what governing means and what it means, a democratic country. What are the features of a democratic country? People question Friendel Stewart, Owen Arthur, the late David Thompson, all of them I question their actions, and not one you hear that you didn't like this person or you didn't like that person. And I can't understand it, and I think they need to stop this nonsense. We don't have an empress, we don't have a queen, we have a prime minister who was elected. And like everybody else, she will do things that people need to question, especially in light of the fact that there is no opposition. Now, that was only as it relates to your point. I have a main point, but I'll just ask one question and then go to my main point. What about the report from those persons that were selected during the COVID, Mr. Owen Arthur, Mr. Chris Sinclair, and others on this committee to discuss what was it called?
It was called revitalization
or something, or economy?
It's called Investment and Employment Advisory Council.
Right.
I
remember the Prime Minister said, I think within 4 weeks we would have gotten a report. As a matter of fact, double the time 4 weeks have gone past and we have not heard anything from them. We don't know if they have met. We have seen nothing. I know Trinidad had a similar thing that was set up, and they have already reported, and the Prime Minister is looking to act on certain things if he hasn't started already. So I want, you know, you come and this is one of the things that I see my role, and I don't even see it only as my role. Really, I think the media should be doing that, and opposition parties, and anybody who has a love for their country. If a government makes an announcement about X, Y, and Z, you come and you ask if you think it is important. Why? What is the position on this? How far are we along with this matter? And I think we should get a report on this, because it was a big, bold announcement, and we heard nothing since. Unless you want to say something, before I go on.
Yeah, if I may comment on that, that is one of the issues I'd had in my arsenal of topics to address at some point. Because like a journalist, like the journalist that I have always been, I still think myself to be, there's a question of follow-up. You don't just leave things hanging. And I understand where that is concerned. I'd made some inquiries about it. I understand I had about 50-something people on it, a very unwieldy combination of people I can understand. And so whoever you thought of might be on it. And I thought it was too big and too unwieldy to have any real substance. And I understand also that it was required to come up with like 50,000 jobs in 2 years. I understand that from my report, that's one of the tasks assigned to it. And it had to be established, from what I'm told, that it was impossible. I don't know if this has anything to harken back to the days when after said that before he became prime minister in 1994, that and you remember he was also on the council, along with former Chris Sinclair. He had said that with the right policy, there was nothing to have prevented Barbados from producing 30,000 jobs. And I think when the count was done in his time, he produced some 35,000 jobs. So I don't know if those kind of expectations were being attached to this council, except that Prime Minister Arthur did it, he did it in a totally different set of circumstances. Therefore, it was foolhardy and unreasonable, unrealistic, and doubly in fantasy to expect that in this climate, any council could be asked to produce 50,000 jobs in 2 years at a time when our resources are so slim and virtually non-existent.
And not only that, looking at the investment across the world, where the countries are contracting in terms of the economy, and growth is on a downward path. And I'm saying to you, if you're looking for foreign investment at this time, that is going to be a little difficult, at least in the short term, if not in the long term, you know. But let me go to my substantive point. Tomorrow, the CCJ is supposed to rule on this whole question of Guyana election, whether it has jurisdiction.
Today? As a matter of correction, it's supposed today.
Today, at 3 time, o'clock.
The judgment, at 3 o'clock, right.
Okay, I thought it was tomorrow at 3. Okay. But I want to say something. Look, all over, you see, and this again, I'm calling on the media. We are getting a one-sided approach to this Guyana election, and all we are hearing is what the former head of CARICOM, Ms. Mia Motley, said, and talking about votes not counting and using the recount votes, et cetera, et cetera. And the media not producing the other side, what is going on. I was sent to the, something on my WhatsApp where there were Guyanese protesting at the Barbados High Commission in London, protesting against the statement by former head of CARICOM, Ms. Mia Motley, about the chief election officer, because he's a public servant. There was protest in certain Bartica, Linden, and certain towns where the APNU is their stronghold. Their supporters have been protesting as well at the CCJ and saying to them they don't trust them.
But with all due respect, wouldn't that become a moot point of discussion now that we are waiting the actual ruling of the CCJ?
But the reason why as it relates to those protests, but I'm saying daily in the papers, in certain sections of the media, because it depends on where you read your news in Guyana, persons are coming out and saying why it is the CCJ is taking 1 week to decide on something that is clear in the law. And then the other point that they're making, they did not like the fact, the pronouncement that the CCJ made. I'm reading from Imran Khan's statement. He wrote a letter to the Gleaner, and he's saying these are some of the concerns that he has. He says the matter is straightforward and need not detain the CCJ for all of a week. It has no jurisdiction and ought to so rule.
Mr. Khan have a known public political
Yes,
position?
I think he was once
is he
PRO
attached to
for
any one of the parties?
Yeah, he was once PRO for the APNU. So he I think the PRO is now Aubrey Norton. But he says there are disturbing signs rising out of the seven-long hearing, which is the composition of the bench hearing the case. And I think of the composition, what he's referring to, because remember the ethnic divide in Guyana, there are two CCJ judges right. who are of Indian descent. They've included both of them on this panel, both of them. Then the comments, he says, the posture of the president and the judges, the curious insistence on exploring irrelevant hypotheses, which the judges themselves described as absurd. You would have to read the comments of this Dutch judge, Jacob Witt. Now, you have to go back to Myrie. Listened to all of the hearing of Myrie, and this man makes some statements that I will not go into it, but Casey was asking about right. why not using the recount results. So what I am saying to you is the problem we are having here is the CCJ is going to make its decision, but the CCJ now has, by their comments of the judges, they have caused the people of Guyana and other persons, Dr. Francis Alexis, eminent constitutional lawyer, others have been saying the CCJ has no jurisdiction. Why are you even commenting on the substantive matter of the case? And even before you rule as to whether or not you have jurisdiction, I will await their decision, but I will say to you, this thing is not settled, you know? Yeah, sorry, Glenn, you wanted to say something. My apologies.
All right. Yeah, I want to say that. Thanks for your I know you've been very strong on this issue. You've been very well informative. But like I said, let's await the court's decision and see where we go from there. On the other hand, one of my complaints has been the trickle of news, the occasional trickle of news you got out of Guyana on the election. We are accustomed that when elections are happening in other territories, in other countries, we get regular reports, virtually day by day reports as to how the whole process is going and the outcome, et cetera. That has not happened in this case. I think the media, for whatever reason, has not been as forthcoming as it has traditionally has been. And I hope that in the future we can correct that. Thanks for calling, and we go to the next call, please. Good morning, Brass Tax.
Hello, and good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
Yes.
Thank you.
I want to touch on 2 points, and I try to be brief, so I hope I get to this.
Sure, thank you.
Welcome back to you as well. Okay. the reasons why we as blacks are in the state we are at, and some is known and some are not known. I was going through YouTube and I came upon Bishop Clarence McClendon. You ever heard that name?
McClendon.
And he actually went back into the archives, USA, is America now, right? And he did some research to find out why are we treated this way. He went from the beginning, okay? Where he came, he actually showed the proof. So it's nothing that he comes up with. How in after 1808, they could not import any more slaves. You know, the slave trade, right? Britain, everybody, they said it. So they couldn't bring them across the Atlantic anymore. So they...
After 1808? I think the slave trade was about...
1808, they could not bring them in. They had slaves, but they could not bring them in anymore. So they decided they would breed their own slaves. Right, they decided they would breed their own slaves south.
Talking about United States alone.
Yeah, United States. They did.
Right.
And they ended up now with many blacks in the south. Okay? So this thing
So what point are you really, making on this?
I'm making on this that the North, right, they had a census.
Yeah.
And they realized that there were so many slaves in the South. And it would upset their Congress and so on. But you know how the United States, they were. So what they decided to do when they were going to Congress and they realized that the South had more blacks, they decided that they would put it as five blacks is equal to three, right?
Uh-huh.
Five blacks, people, is actually equal to three, so that the South would
three
not
whites
have...
Three whites or three in the North?
You know, three in the North, five blacks would be equal to three people. So that's how they become that we are three-fifths of a human being. We are three-fifths. So these people never see us as human beings, right? We are three-fifths of us. We are not quite human. So they can never treat us. He's saying they can never treat us as equals because it was propagated that we are three-fifths of a human being. So everything that is
but
done...
I think the point you're making is that it is very difficult, if not impossible, to eradicate, uproot these long-standing attitudes of racism.
Because
that's one of the reasons why you have discrimination all over the world, because it's passed on from generation. People are socialized on it.
Exactly.
And even something informally it's there. So therefore we have, it's like eradicated disease and sickness. There's always, you always have to be fighting it. Disease and sickness and poverty. Prejudice and discrimination are inherent in the socialization of people all over the world.
Especially in the South of America, where they tell their children the same thing for generations. And it is evident last week, this young man.
Do you think that same attitude, any of those attitudes obtained in Barbados today too? Do you think those same attitudes about Barbados apply to the Barbados situation?
Yes, it is all over. This fellow was speaking to this fellow in America was speaking about the school. They had this meeting, and would you know that one of those ladies on the board, rather than listen to what he was saying, she was for a time and sent it to his phone. These people are white, right? And she is shopping online. Instead of listening to what he's saying about his, she is shopping online. And he called her out to it, and then she apologized. So what I'm saying is this is time for change. And when people are talking about don't take down Nelson and this thing, that thing, I ain't hear the word people saying don't take down Nelson. A lot of our black people are saying don't take down Nelson. He need taking down because it's the same way that when Martin Luther King lost his life over us, we went to sleep after that. And that is why we are where we are today. We gone right back 1960 but
if, I, if I can bring you a little closer to home, as a result of what you said, and I quite understand and support more of what you say, what were your thoughts on Blackout Day yesterday and the whole concept of having blackout days and that Black should only support Black citizens? So what's your perspective on that? There's something practical.
Blackout Day is a good thing. American Black spend, I can't remember, they said $11 trillion or something like that. And they need them.
I'm talking about Blackout Day in Barbados.
I'm not saying that don't spend with whites, okay? I would never say that. Plus, I have some white family too, but I got to speak the truth. Spend some with your own. Nobody is saying don't spend with whites. And let me go on now to my final point. I don't want to keep you too long. Mr. Okay. Andrew Bynum, he is a gentleman I respect. Through my church, I get to know him, and he's, you know, very kind and so on. But Mr. Bynum, when you're saying that you buy from the whites, and therefore I think you would figure that if you don't buy that, you're in trouble. Why is that you only have to buy from whites? It is because the whites have that power. You should be able to buy from blacks because the blacks should have some of that kind of business going on. And Mr. Bynum, there's a free economy and market. You don't have to buy everything. I'm not telling you what to do. This is just coming out of my head. There's a free market. And the gentleman calling after Mr. Bynum made his statement and saying it won't be able to hold up for long. It can hold up because there are goods from all over the world. But we may want to destroy Barbados. But don't put us that. If we don't do this, the next thing will happen. And if we don't do that, no.
All right.
Mr. Bynum, I look to you as an example.
We need a break. Yeah, we need a break. We need a commercial break coming up. We're glad. I'll take you up on this. So I'll take forward some of your comments and we go ahead during the program during the rest of the day. Thanks for calling, ma'am. Welcome back to today's edition of Getting Down to Brass Tacks. 434-1790 is the number to call. And the strange voice you were hearing for such a long time is that of Glenn Murray, your moderator for today. I'd just like to make a quick reference to a WhatsApp I got where it says, good morning. Please ask the Trinidad lady to speak about the unrest in Trinidad. Thank you and have a good day. Nice having you back. I know she's the person we refer to as the Trinidad lady has been very strong and vocal and voluble on the situation in Guyana, brought a lot of information to the public. And I guess because of your Trinidad connection, they're being asked that you should speak on that. Out of which something we're not hearing about much anyhow. I'd be glad if at some other day, not necessarily with me, you could also bring your expertise to bear on that situation. Brass Tacks, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Murray. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, sir.
Well, I want to welcome you back. I had heard that you were coming tomorrow. You still coming tomorrow?
Yeah. No. That was an error. Today is the day.
Today is the day. Or I was on my way out to do something for a friend, and I just heard the starting of the program. So I just said I would come and welcome you back. I see you as the SOS of the program because it's been taking a beating recently. But I've been around a long time, so I know. So I just wanted to come to give you a welcome back because I was even thinking about asking Mr. Ellis if he could do it from at home and get you back to the program. But I got to go and do something for a friend of mine, but I just wanted to give you a welcome back. So,
yes, thank you.
Then next year, I'll be able to look at some topics. You have a nice day.
I'm looking forward to engaging you in your inimitable style in the future, sir. And thank you for your best wishes.
Yeah, thank you. Good.
Brass Tacks, we are on air. Come in, please.
Hello, good morning. Hello.
Good
Hi.
Morning.
Right. My Hi, good morning. I have a. Morning.
Well, yeah, go right ahead. We are hearing
you. I have an issue with license authority, right? During the COVID, my driver's test date was canceled March the 30th. Now, license authority said come in for a new date. Now, they're asking persons to renew their permit for the COVID period, April to June, which I find is unreasonable that I have to pay for that period. And also, They want you renew it for the COVID period, then another 6 months. My thing is, my date was canceled due to COVID. It was expired, but now I have to owe $115. And the only answer they got is, that's the system and everyone is seeing.
But it's the system, just like the Bible says that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. The system is created to serve man and not man to serve the system. But this aspect that you are in the same boats of those people who are in the water scarce areas or the water absent areas, who complain that they still get monthly bills and for increasing amounts too. You have to understand that the government and this institution need revenue. And I suspect that if they do that, they'll be losing revenue and they badly need revenue. But at the same time, it's not fair. It's not fair to the consumer when through no fault of that person's, they have to pay more money than they had originally intended. Money is so tight and scarce for all concern. Right. So I think you have a justifiable case the system can be changed, can be amended. In the same way you amend the laws, in the same way you write off back for companies and give concessions, mm-hmm. gives concessions to the public who are paying their hard-earned money into the government. It comes back to the government. If you don't pay into them, you will go and spend at the supermarket on the store. And therefore, create the activity that putting it into the coffers of the government directly cannot do. So I think you're justified. And I'm surprised that the government should be so insensitive and so, the Ministry of Transport work, to be so insensitive and so intransigent that they don't even give you the courtesy of attempting to explain away why they're doing it to at least make you feel that they are listening to you, they're hearing you. But they're just stonewalling.
Yes, because they told the lady with the government urging others to be lenient with people, but yet Lisa Natari is asking persons to pay for 3 months. And not just that, my thing is, my date was canceled in March. Why can't I pay for another 3 months instead of another 6 months, which is putting me out more? But they're not understanding.
Fair enough. I think those people who are aggrieved have a justifiable reason to agitate, to keep mentioning and making. Just remember this, in public life, something becomes an issue not because of its. People think it's important, but the amount of activity and publicity and discussion that people are forced to pay attention, that is what makes it. You keep talking about it and let the authorities, let the powers that be forced to make a decision on it one way or the other. Thanks for calling, ma'am. Brad Stacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Murray.
Good morning. Ma'am.
Good morning. Welcome,
morning.
Ma'am. Morning.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, I'm hearing you. Thank you. Thanks for the warm welcome.
Are you hearing me?
Loud and clear, ma'am. Yeah, go ahead.
I am calling because I have a concern about the nurses. In the president's address of the Nurses Association, she said that only 15% of the nursing fraternity could opt for the BOSS program. Because the others, after being registered and qualified for some over 6 years, their salaries are so poor, Ricky, they cannot join the BOSS program.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do about that?
That caught my ear and my attention. I was actually horrified that the disparity.
I found it appalling.
And you know, and it therefore horrified my. I've made 3 or 4 calls in the last several weeks, months, dealing with the whole COVID situation. That is all right to clap and cheer and put out videos of our heroes. But I think we have to do it in tangible ways to make people's lives better. And I think the nurses, and I've been calling for that, I've been calling for a flat bonus to be given all persons who are considered frontline workers in government when things improve in the society. And also that people, each worker, gets an honor called something like Defender of Barbados, so they can wear for the rest of their life, and that we don't just give lip service to people's work, but that we make their life better, show it in tangible ways in their life. And I think that's a justifiable case. That's no wonder we are losing so many nurses time and time again to wealthier countries, and people can offer better conditions
because they have a dastardly task of this work, because this is such a dangerous situation with the corona. It is amazing that the President of the United States has not yet made it a federal case for mandatory wearing of of a mask, and we are expected to bring those people into Barbados. We are going to be at a high risk. I hope, I wish the country well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ma'am. Brassatz, good morning. Hello, Brassatz, good morning. Good morning.
Morning, good morning. Am I on the air?
Yes, yes, please.
Yes,
yes, yes, you are.
Welcome back, Mr. Murray.
Yes.
No.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm calling. This is the hurricane season, right? And when I drive along the road, I am seeing a whole lot of trees in the power lines, over the road, all down Elche Road, Melrose, through the bridge, and all over the place. What are we doing about those? Are we going to wait until the bad weather come and blow down and block up and pop down the power lines to do something about it? I want the persons in charge to do something about those trees hanging over the roads and going through the power lines. You understand, Mr. Murray?
Yeah, could you identify those areas again?
Melrose, there's one right outside. When you pass Melrose by the CC factory, it's over the side. The tree is just behind the CC factory, but it has spanned the whole road. It's part of canopy over the road. You understand? And then when you go down by Lester Vaughan School, you see a whole set down there, and then through the bridge, there's a whole set down there too. You understand?
I remember. Yeah, I understand you. Thanks for the information. Thanks for the public service. I know there used to be a virtual annual exercise involving the Barbados Light and Power Company, where they would send out crews to various locations to trim those trees. And also, I think the Ministry of Public Works and some other government agency used to do it in the past. I don't know what. I'm wondering why it's not being done, because it's clearly a necessity. Even people are being encouraged to get ready for hurricane season in various ways. That's part of their process. Maybe it's a question of where government it is lack of resources, finances. But to me, that's a critical area. And ways and means should be found to do those basic things that are crucial to the safety of the country. And that things are to keep things rolling and to make sure that nothing happens that we therefore have to spend more money and call upon the government more than we have when things are so tight in the country. So I think that is a useful call. Yes.
Our problem is that we are reactive rather than proactive. That's the problem with this country today. Have a nice day, sir.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Good morning. I'd like to make a couple of references to some other issues as we go along. I've getting some calls asking me, for example, what do I mean when I said that brass tacks is of a higher standard sometimes, even than Parliament, or most of the time. I think that that lady just used a phrase when she was talking about these salaries of nurses, describing as poor Ricky. And it really made me remember a statement, former Prime Minister Onath, who described the last Parliament as a poor Ricky one. I think the reason why I said brass tacks is the debate on brass tacks most days, and it can be of a higher level than Parliament, is that I do not, there are not many persons in Parliament that I look forward to hearing, that I would turn on the radio, turn on my TV just to hear them speak, because I think they have a quality presentation to make. And there are very few, probably five or six on the government side in the House of Assembly. And that is why I say that. And the Senate, a few. Because I think part of the problem is that because of the overwhelming numbers on the government side, 29-1, well, if you take out a couple because of the Speaker, Deputy Speaker, the Chairman of Committee is not engaged in ongoing debates on a regular basis, that most of the time is spent in congratulating each other, congratulating the government for what a wonderful job it has done, for invoking the name of the Prime Minister, rather than speaking for their thoughts and their ministry's thoughts and ministry's policies and program. Too much time is spent in congratulating himself on his last victory. attacking the last government and referring everything in the context of the prime minister rather than, I'm shocked that more than 2 years into ministries, that most ministers still have not come up with any definitive programs or policies that would bring visible, tangible, realizable demonstration to what they're seeking to do in the ministry on a day-by-day basis. What they're seeking to do involving the army of public servants, sometimes even consultants, and not enough policy is coming out. I therefore would like to welcome the steps taken yesterday of Minister Dwight Sutherland, looking at the regulatory side of bringing the policy of the renewable energy sector to the public's attention. We need more of that. We still do not have, for example, if you look at the Ministry of Sports, Youth and Culture, I think that's the name, Minister John King, we still have not had a definitive, articulated sports policy out of the National Sports Council and the Ministry of Sport, where we can see where we are heading, what the goals are, what the objectives are, what the expectations are from people in times ahead. So therefore, we just hear about announcements for events here and there to keep things going in COVID, but there's no long-term, there's no aspirational indications given as to where they intend to take us, what persons can look forward to, and whatnot. And I would like to see that improved. Those are things we could wait. And that's but one example of what's happening in Parliament. I therefore look forward to our continuous discussion and when we get back to Brass Tacks. Good morning. Welcome back to Getting Down to Brass Tacks. 434-1790 is our phone number. 266-4862 is our WhatsApp number. I'm Glenn Murray, your moderator. Welcome and welcome back. You're on the air, please.
Good morning, Mr. Murray.
Brass Tack?
Good morning, Mr. Murray.
Good morning, sir. I'm hearing you, sir. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Murray.
Good morning. Good morning. I got you. Are you hearing me? Hello. I think I lost you.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Speak up, please. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. I'm hearing you.
All right, Mr. Murray.
Yes, sir.
I didn't expect to hear you today.
Uh-huh.
Because I was told yesterday that you would be out tomorrow.
Right.
Anyhow.
Nevertheless, I hope you're glad to hear me on air.
Yes. I would say that okay. I believe you're going to bring a fresh breeze blowing through this radio station from today. Now, I want to deal with three topics and I congratulate you on your return. I want to deal with three topics and they're going to be very short, if you allow me to do so.
Yeah, go right ahead, sure. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah. Now, I want to look at two words, private sector and grave digger. Soil technician, grave digger, private sector, mercantile, and what you call merchant class, privately running the country. I remember growing up, and I used to hear about the planter class and the merchant class that was running the country. And in the beginning of the democratic government, since we had parliamentary rule, we were fighting to take over the rule of running the country under the disguise of parliamentary, that being elected and the majority should be black, because we had considered the merchant class as white and the planter class as white. Right or wrong?
Yeah, that's the general perception of those eras, yeah.
Yes. But all of a sudden now, I have realized that the words to describe these people has changed. I thought that when I heard the battle was going on, that the black people or the colored people or the ordinary people that go to parliament take over the country, that they were going to run the country. But now all of a sudden, you are hearing the best person to run the country is private sector. Now, the private sector is not the same.
What do you mean by run the country?
As far as
you said, the best person to run
the economy, the economy.
Oh, okay.
The economy,
to run it or to stimulate it or to drive it.
Exactly, because the country was being run before by the planter and the mercantile class, and yet they used to control the legislative body. You remember that?
I'm trying to make a distinction between the country and the economy or commerce.
Because the economy at that time, during the days when we used to be critical of the planter class and the merchant class, they also had a representative in the legislative body.
Right,
so
I remember that.
The first thing we did is take over Parliament. And now you are hearing all the same politicians that was fighting to get control telling you the best body to run the country is the private sector to drive the economy. I'm a bit confused, but I'm not going to take up much of your time on that.
But let me, if I can comment on that, I too have noted that with some interest, because growing up, I think all generations probably overlap. We used to hear about democratic socialism or socialist policies. The country, the government was expected after 51, when Grand Adams got the universal debt suffrage for the BLP and the rest of the country, we were expected that the government would be an interventionist government, an activist government, seeking to influence activities, the policies, the program, the direction of the country, and make sure that what evolved was for the overall benefit, for the maximum of the greater good, rather than any one small sector in our interest. But knowing in these days, we're here with the private sector driven, coming out of what has been known as the Washington Consensus and the neoliberal thinking, which means the neoliberals are those who would have us believe that the best thing for the economy, you know, like globalization, and that everything should be is for the private sector to drive, to take on the lead, and that the rest of the country should follow. I think the people, the current generation of politicians in Barbados seem to have taken on that, if not explicitly, and you don't hear the references to the role of government anymore. You hear about, from a philosophical point of view, you hear about government doing things from a practical, but there's no philosophical momentum behind this attitude, I think.
All right, let me go on to my second point. My second point is this. I, growing up from in the 50s until now, and I have realized that whenever black people take over things, I know it can be critical, and I know I will listen to people who will be coming. I remember growing up, and when I heard the double murder at Bishop Court Hill, I said to myself, Lord, what is happening? I grew up when all the churches had vicarage where the reverend used to live at. And in those days, most of the reverends were white. The vicarage was well kept. I came along when the police stations had sergeants that were stationed. There was house provided for those sergeants. Today, we take over, the colored people take over the running of the country. And let me tell you this. When I was growing up, to get to houses in the tenantry, the roads was that bad. But none of those doctors who had to be called to the as parish doctors, you call on them to come and visit a patient, they never shy away. Today you can't get a black doctor coming at you easily. So I am trying to find out if something is wrong with our thinking, that all of these things that colored people take up is running to ruin. I want to look at another point. Let me finish, Greg.
I'm disappointed for you to make that kind of derogatory remark about colored people or black people taking over things, because I think you have to understand. Are you trying to make me believe that nothing good has happened in Barbados since 1951, when universal debt suffrage came and where black people took over the reins of government through democracy by having the universal debt suffrage?
But all I am telling you, whether you like it or not, the evidence is there. Why it is that all of these places has been run to ruin under black administration?
But,
that's all I ask.
Let me deal with the Anglican Church.
I am dealing with the evidence that is there.
But the evidence has to be the evidence, the evidence has been examined and put into context. You have to understand the Anglican Church was the established church, which is backed by the British government, by the elite of Barbados, and had government backing. So a lot of those things which could have been afforded that you had parochial system of government that fed into one another.
So all you are telling me then that under the colonial rule things was going on better? Because you are no longer under the colonial rule and you can't maintain a residence forever. Something got wrong.
Let me add this to the discussion. Are you trying to tell me that the things that you have criticized and frowned upon, right? All the other good that has happened to Barbados since 1951? That is more of those few incidents.
Listen, there's a class that benefit, and I'm talking about what is actual evidence. If you could come and tell me the reason why you don't have church, vicarage, and good condition to live in, the reason why that you don't have police stations that was left there by the colonial, the houses with police stations that run to ruin, you can tell me anything
I know for sure that part of the problem, I don't know the whole answer, but I know from dealing in government.
I need evidence that the public could see.
Let me finish my point. A lot that the Anglican no longer had the money needed to maintain a lot of these properties. And that came out when it was involved in the processing government. And then back to the Methodists, the Moravians, and the Anglicans, their properties that had been used as school institutions in the past. When the government paid back some of them money and also restored and returned their properties to them. And I remember
Let me go on and finish what you have to say that others could get in.
Yeah.
Now, I heard you talking about Minister Sutherland speaking about waste, the energy plan. Let me ask you a question. Under the Democratic Labour Party, there was talk about a waste energy plant named Cahill. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, Cahill, that's right. Very controversial.
All right. I want to ask a question. I heard the numbers that bandied about by Sutherland. I mean, I never knew that Sutherland was responsible for energy. I didn't know that.
No.
In all fairness
to him, he was speaking as the minister responsible for the Fair Trading Commission, the regulatory agencies under which the renewable energy sector, I ain't covering up for none. I want to know what happened
to the minister of the environment and the person that responsible for energy. That's all I'm asking. Let me finish what I am saying. The fact remains that there was a waste energy plan that the Democratic Labour Party had supposed to be involved in. I would like to know what is the cost of that plan that was supposed to come on stream when the Democratic Labour Party had it. And I heard Mr. Sutherland, I don't know how knowledgeable he is about that, but I heard him said that the plant that they are going to build would cost over $320 million. Well, I didn't have the opportunity to look up to see what the waste energy plant would have cost the Democratic Labour Party. But I only say that to say this, that you could call it a sheep, it could look like a goat. The same policy that the Democratic Labour Party that waste 10 years, according to the accusations, I have not seen anything new coming from this administration, because if you look back, the same Hayat was a project belonging to the Democratic Labour Party. The idea about waste energy came from the Democratic Labour Party. And it's the difference with who get the opportunity to, I would say, engage in discharging what they want. And I would like a date that they will start the waste energy plant and the cost.
Okay.
And at the same time, I would like to know, because I heard the Prime Minister talk about cutting back on rental fee. I want to know what is going to happen with the Treasury building. because let me finish it. Okay, finish on this one. When people tell you when the rain set up, when it say look dark, you know the rain going to fall. I recall the moderator David Ellis spoke heavily on the Treasury building with the guy that always around there, and he said it's not being kept. I can't remember his colleague name, but he lived around.
Named your man.
Right, a lot of garbage. I remember very well that when the National Insurance building was to come down, the same David Ellis said that people was about there, the vagrants. So when I hear David Ellis speaking about vagrants around the Treasury building, and you could push down the National Insurance building because of vagrants and other things to put up a player park for Clement Payne, you don't think
you gotta go
that
now,
is a possibility that the Treasury building, since David Ellis made his contribution towards it, could be taken down to expand the Hero Square.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.